me to say that I'm as pleased as Punch to say that I'm as pleased as Punch to say that here comes the Colonel.
Well, I'm sure glad somebody's pleased as Punch. The idiots get in here from the Comedy Central auditions down the hall. Anyway, welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In the first half hour, you heard Mindy Carmichael and Alicia Winkleblack. I got to be sure to pronounce that name correctly. With the city of Arlington talking about the remarkable things that are going on with traffic control in the new Internet of Things, which you'll hear more about at the IEEE MetroCon conference sponsored by Lockheed and Encore. That's going to be October 26th at the Arlington Convention Center. More on that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. In just a minute, we're going to check in with our old friend, Dr. Dashuan Feng, who's going to bring us up to date on things that are going on in China. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But now let's step over to our fountain of useless information for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Yes, yes, yes. We have awakened the spirit of the fountain. We have him now. The spirit of the fountain who knows all, hears all, sees all, and tells all for a price. That's the reason we had to throw in the coins. Okay. Oh, spirit of the fountain, here we go. You should know this one. What African country has 11 officially recognized languages? An African country with 11 officially recognized languages. Which one is it, O Spirit of the Fountain?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the other.
The Spirit of the Fountain knows, after thinking it over just a bit. The African country that has 11 officially recognized languages? Well, I guessed the Congo, but I was wrong. And if you guessed the Congo, you were wrong, too. No! The African country with 11 officially recognized languages is South Africa. Okay, let's get on with our program. Okay, we want to get back to our visit with Dr. Dashuan Feng, a dear friend, senior fellow, director of global affairs, University of Macau in China, who is giving us some pretty great insights about China and the vast history of the area. We had breakfast with him a while back in a noisy restaurant. We managed to filter out most of the noise, we think. So we hope you can catch all the fascinating things about China he explained to us.
But there's no land, unlike Texas. There is no land in Macau to grow a world-class university. It only has 30 square kilometers. Probably bigger than, no, smaller than Plano.
Oh, wow.
Okay? So therefore, a negotiation started between Macau and China about leasing land from China to build, to expand the University of Macau, which until then was probably nothing more than a low-level teaching institutions of the lowest level. And now, think about this. You, Macau, of course, is under the One Nation, Two System jurisdiction, which means that Macau enjoys everything independent except for foreign and military decisions. Everything else, police, education, healthcare, all that is Macau. So de facto, it's a nation without certain jurisdictions. So if you're going to, and there's no land in Macau, if you want to move into Hong Kong, into China, and borrow land from China or lease land from China, it's like leasing land from the United States. But what Macau wanted is that not only I lease land from you, I want that piece of land to have Macau autonomy.
Ah,
So China was reluctant to do that. It's like saying I want a Mexican university sitting right inside the United States land, but the jurisdiction will have to be Mexican. The currency used in that land will be pesos and not U.S. dollars, and the laws will be Mexican law. In other words, if Trump wants to build a wall, it will have to build around it.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And you can see how difficult it was.
Oh, yeah.
So 2 years later, China said, okay. China said, you can have one piece of one square kilometer of land. And that one square kilometer of land will have only two things on it. A, it can only be used as the University of Macau. And B, the construction of the entire university, which involves 80 buildings, a full university landscape with a man-made lake, must be completed in 4 years with Macau money and Chinese workforce. And they started in 2009. In fact, with a large board clocked down second by second. So Macau government coughed up $2 billion for the campus. And China poured in workers. At the height, 17,000 workers working on that one square kilometer.
What an amazing story, Dashwan.
By the end of 2013, it was completed. Okay? And the University of Macau, which used to own a land size no bigger than a football field, moved into this new one square kilometer, which is 20 times bigger. Now, then, of course, a wall was built around the campus because in this land, on 2013, I believe, sometime on July 1st, midnight, the People's Liberation Army, which has jurisdiction over the land, handed the jurisdiction to Macau's police. And then they moved out. So de facto, Macau's land size went from 30 square kilometer to 31 square kilometer.
But China can come back and march in with the People's Liberation Army anytime they please and strong arm Macau and just grab it the same way as they can do in Hong Kong, right?
Right. Well, but they don't even need to do that had they wanted it to begin with, because it was always theirs. So they actually agreed to move out, just like Hong Kong. And they do have a presence. The People's Liberation Army has a presence in Macau, just like there's a presence in Hong Kong. But they're not, when they leave the barrack, which is a very tightly controlled barrack, they cannot wear uniforms. So you don't see them on the street. Okay, they're not allowed to wear uniforms, military uniforms on the street. Okay? Can they march in? I guess so. But why would they? Okay. Anyway, so the university actually moved in, and the university invited me to come for several things. A, to build a global strategy, and B, to really instill the concept of what world-class universities could be like. And by the way, there's a lot of Texas influence there. The president, his name is Wei Zhao, was formerly associate provost of research of Texas A&M University. Okay. And so we have a lot of tech, and the dean of engineering was the former dean of engineering of UT, University of Texas San Antonio. So we have somehow a lot of Texas influence there. So this is what, and because now unlike Taiwan, Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, in Taiwan, you knew that mainland is across the streets.
And you told me that there's air flights in and out of there every day, and you're sharing information and everything else.
800 flights a day, a week, okay? But you don't see China. You cannot physically see China in Taiwan. In Hong Kong, it's the same thing, although there's connection at the north end, but 90-95% of the people live in Kowloon and Hong Kong. They don't see China either. In Macau, you open up your eyes, it's there. So the relationship, and I said also about Britain and Portugal just now. Britain and Portugal are two totally different nations in terms of global outreach. When the British and its armada went out to the world, very quickly they formed a company called East Indian Company. I don't know whether you know
that. Oh, absolutely, yes, quite frankly, and very active in India itself.
The company has an interesting model called the company that rules the waves. You know, you may have remembered the English song, Rule Britannia, Britannia rule the waves.
Absolutely.
And that's where, and the British would say the sun never sets on Great Britain. Furthermore, I grew up in Singapore, so I know how they do it. They would quickly set up educational institutions and train local people to be British bureaucrats, and then select the brightest to study in Great Britain, usually in Cambridge and Oxford. So they became totally loyal to the British Empire and then returned to the native land to run the country. This is why England could rule India so much bigger than England. The Portuguese are totally different. The Portuguese, they never built any educational infrastructure. They never encouraged the local people to learn their language. It's very interesting. You should come and take a look at Portugal, Macau. There are two street signs of every street, Portuguese and English, and Chinese. 95% or 99% of the people in Macau don't speak Portuguese. So they have no idea what that street sign meant.
So only 5% would read the street
sign? Probably 1%, okay? And the street signs, when they translate from Portuguese into Chinese, sounds so strange that it's a tongue twister. So what happens in Macau? In other words, if I ask you where is UTD, you would tell me, well, go on 75 and you turn on another street and so on. Well, nowadays you don't do that, now you GPS, but in Macau, you don't say, drive down this street and make a right turn on that street with names and so on eventually. Because nobody knows the street names. So you say, look at that green building. You go to that green building and make a right on that green building. The next right building underneath, you see a Walmart sign. And, this is how they tell people how to go around. It's complete. And Macau is the only place in Asia where there are essentially no government secondary and elementary schools. They're all private. They're either by the Chinese community or by the missionaries. So the whole psyche, the whole philosophy of Macau and Macau people and its relationship with the Portuguese government or the Portuguese colonial non-existent. So the Macau people, in many ways, unlike the Hong Kong people, have always felt that they're Chinese. It was never a question whether they're, even though they're not in China, in the one country, two system, even during the days when it was a colony, the fact that they're Chinese was never an issue. So that's the whole difference between Macau. And that's why the University of Macau now is very much a part of the Chinese higher education landscape, which Taiwan wasn't. And now I begin to learn about the Chinese higher education landscape that I never did before.
Wow, and it's more complicated than you thought, is that right?
It's complicated, it's fascinating, and it is the reason why China is today. Is the educational, in some sense, the robustness of Chinese education, and also some of the challenges they have.
Now, I can still remember when China was so isolated and by the world. It wasn't just from the United States, but it was the world. And now, nowadays, it seems so cosmopolitan.
Absolutely. I'm on the board of a new college of Central China's University of Science and Technology in Wuhan, which is, you can think of Wuhan like the Detroit of China, not the bad side, but the robustness, the industry center of China, or Chicago of China. And I'm on the board of this new college that they form called the College of Engineering Science. So I looked at its mission statement and their constitution. The line immediately caught my attention. The dean of this college cannot be a Chinese. It must be a non-Chinese.
Like, what do you mean? Like a Portuguese or American or something?
Like you. Okay? So they hired someone, a very distinguished scientist from Germany, to be the dean. So this is the kind of change that is occurring right now in China. They also, in the top Chinese university called Tsinghua in Beijing, recently, four years ago, hired a very, very, very distinguished, although Chinese-born, but very distinguished life scientist from Princeton University to be its vice president. So you can see things that was unthinkable just 10 years ago are now happening. I was also on a board of another university called Shantou University, which is about 120 kilometers from Hong Kong. It was the hometown of Li Ka-shing, who is probably the richest person he's number two now. It used to be the guy from, it used to be him, but now it's Alibaba's CEO. Okay. He's called Li Ka-shing. That's his hometown, so he built this university, Shantou University. Shantou University did two things that's absolutely stunning. A, on its side, they collaborated with Technion of Israel to form the Technion Guangdong Institute of Technology. And they hired the 2004 Technion Nobel Laureate Aaron Shikhanova to be its chancellor.
In China?
Yes. And Shantou University, I happen to know a pair of identical twins in India. One of them is a faculty member in civil engineering in one of the top universities called IIT, Indian Institute of Technology in Guwahati. And another one did his PhD, and his twin brother did his PhD in Singapore's Nanyang Technological University in mechatronics engineering. And both of them are now professors at Shantou University. Okay. And recently I visited a university in northeast of China, far away from Hong Kong, almost 3,000 kilometers from Hong Kong, in the northeast end called Changchun. It was the old Manchukuo capital during the Japanese occupation. The university called Jilin University. And I found out that in their medical school, there are 200 Indians studying there. So things are transforming in such a stunning manner that is totally unknown in the U.S.
Absolutely. We don't know anything about this. In fact, there's a fear of China wanting to militarize the South China Sea by building islands and this sort of thing. Yeah. The idea that China's looking for world domination, and so maybe that's why Obama decided to keep China out of that Pacific partnership.
I think the difference between I cannot comment on Obama's decision because I don't know what was in his head. But I think that looking at China and looking at U.S., you can always tell the difference. U.S. is a young country. 300 years is a young country. China and India are old countries. By old, I mean 5,000 years. And one think of China cannot use 300 years to think of China. You have to use 5,000 years to think of China, which is very tough for Americans to do. Because beyond 300 years, there's nothing here. Okay? And so, in the Ming Dynasty, there was a Muslim in China. His name is Zheng He. Now, he's very interesting. Actually, he has a Muslim name. He was Muslim. And eventually he also became an admiral. In the Chinese Navy in those days. And it's a very interesting piece of history because he led an armada, Chinese naval armada, of about 30,000 soldiers and seven times out of China into Southeast Asia, into Indonesia, into Ceylon.
Our dear friend of many years, Dr. Dashuan Feng, senior fellow, director of global affairs at the University of Macau in China. We had breakfast with him a little while back, and very interesting insight on China, which we will have to continue because we're running out of time. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to the this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
We should think, as engineers, we have our ultimate responsibility to the society, number one. Number two is that we have abide, as a society, we have to abide with the moral standard. At the time when we consider our own liberty, we have to consider the harmonious of the whole society. Don't think that you can do anything wrong without being seen, especially the future technology come out. For example, the teenagers, the little kids that was in 12 or 13 years old, especially popular application like a snapshot, a disappear message. Don't think that disappear message really disappear. There's a various ways the message being recorded. Even the king of snapshot, Mr. Kell himself, saved his own favorite clips as a classics. So they're not going to be disappearing. Just do the right thing no matter who is watching or not watching. Hong Ne, professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering Department, ECE Graduate Program Director at University of Massachusetts Dartmouth.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about The Promise of Tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.